parts of me wished that maybe they should have used terminate for medical reasons. Maybe that would have made me feel like I wasn't making that decision. It was because the medics were advising me to do that. Because I didn't even know this terminology existed. And once we delivered and I'd seen this terminology being used, I wasn't even sure if, had I terminated for medical reasons, or am I just using that terminology to soften the decision that I've made to make myself feel better about it?
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Hayley Manning.
And I'm Catherine Mousley. Today we're joined by Priya Shah. In 2017, Priya and her husband Ricky found out they were pregnant with triplets. Their shock and joy was short-lived when they were told that in order to save even one baby, they would need to reduce their pregnancy. Priya went through a TFMR with one of her babies, and then later discovered that one of the remaining two babies would be likely to die shortly after birth. She has created a space on social media and her blog, R1 of 3, to talk about her experience of losing two babies in one pregnancy.
So we've had a few listeners get in touch about their experiences of being pregnant with multiples and then finding out that something is either wrong with one or more of the babies or the mother's health is at risk. And they're being asked to make a decision to end the pregnancy for one or more of their babies. This happens. Pregnancies with multiples are automatically classed as high risk. And I think it's important to highlight the heartbreak that these parents go through. So thank you, Priya, for joining us. It's really great to have you here.
No, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
And I thought maybe what we should start with is what you feel people should know about pregnancies with multiples.
I think obviously, as with any pregnancy, when you find out it's a multiple pregnancy, it's so exciting and you automatically jump past the pregnancy to having those multiples in your arms, you know, at home. I don't think you think about the difficulties that are associated with that pregnancy. And I certainly did that. Despite having a bit of a medical knowledge, I automatically jumped to, okay, we're having triplets, brilliant, we will therefore have three babies at home. But the reality, as you mentioned, is that they are high risk and not all parents get to bring all their babies home. So I think that's the one thing that I would say to people that are finding out that they have multiple pregnancies. So, you know, firstly, congratulations, but secondly, ask questions. I think that's one of the other things that I would say is ask questions of your consultant, ask about the specifics of the makeup of your pregnancy, what those risks are. And if they don't know the answers, push harder to get directed to someone that does.
Mm. Yeah. And so when you talked about, you know, you went in for this scan and what happened to you is that you had some bleeding. You knew you were pregnant and then you were a few weeks pregnant and you had some bleeding. So you went in to find out what was going on. And if you had this thought, I could be miscarrying.
Yeah.
You know, you and your husband are both doctors. You're very well aware of what can happen. And it was then at that scan to find out what's going on that they went, oh, congratulations, there are three babies here. Yes. And so was, you know, you were hit with this kind of news.
Yes.
And like you said, you sort of went, oh my God, this is exciting. And then almost in the same breath, it was a, and we need to let you know about the risks that are involved here or what's happening with these babies.
Well, actually, it wasn't told to us that same day. That day when we found out we had triplets, it was all positive. Mm. And in fact, I remember the ultrasonographer saying, don't worry, we've got a brilliant multiple pregnancy consultant and team here. And so I left on a high. So was Ricky, so were my parents. It was only the next day, and I was doing a community gynae job at that time, and I was working with someone who I really respect, who's a friend. And it was her actually that said, this could be a pathological pregnancy. And she used those words. And I found that really hard to hear at the time. And I still do, I struggle to say it because it doesn't sound nice at all.
What does that mean, pathological pregnancy?
Pathological means that's something wrong. There's something wrong with this pregnancy.
Okay. Yeah.
For it to have happened like this.
Okay.
And
because we'll just say here, this was a natural
pregnancy. This was a natural pregnancy.
In case anybody's wondering, this wasn't through IVF, this was natural.
Mm.
Yeah. In inverted commas, natural pregnancy.
And I think that's when our world came crashing down. And then that's when we realized, crumbs, there are questions that we need to ask here. Why has my friend, my colleague said this to me? And it was her that said, you've got decisions to make now. Then we had a fetal medicine appointment, and that's when everything started unraveling.
Yeah. And was it at that appointment that it was found that, yes, you've got identical twins sharing the same placenta, and then another single baby with its own sac and placenta?
Yes.
And that there was a potential problem going on with the twins, the identical twins.
Yes, I mean, at that point, there were no problems as such. So yes, they told us the makeup of the pregnancy, so identical twins and a baby by themselves, but there weren't any major issues at that point. However, the consultant preempted that there would be issues, you know, that it's likely that the pregnancy wouldn't go the full distance, that because of that, the risk of prematurity, there would then be a risk of cerebral palsy. So there were, at that point, within the pregnancy itself, there didn't seem to be any issues, but he threw up a lot of questions.
Just the issues of that it's a multiple pregnancy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I found really difficult then was that that consultant, he was looking up papers at the time during the consultation. And because he knew we were both doctors, he said, oh, you know, you need to go away and read some papers and then decide what you want to do. And I found that I didn't want to be a doctor then. You know, I was just a parent, a patient.
We've heard this before.
Really?
We've had this before, yes, from another guest that is also a doctor.
Is that Shima? I think Shima is a doctor, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah, it was Shima. That's right, Shima Tarek. And
I can't believe people. Yeah,
she had a very similar.
Can't believe it.
Yeah. Not necessarily. I don't think she was told go away and read some papers, but it was a very much go away. You're a doctor. You can figure this out because you've got the medical knowledge. We don't need to tell you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't dream of saying that to one of my patients. Obviously, I don't want to criticize that doctor too much because they must have had their reasons for saying that. And we all make miscommunications. We're all human. But I think at that point, I really needed someone to hold my hand and to tell me, you know, not to worry, to take that responsibility away from me, almost. It's not that I didn't want to be involved in decision-making, but I think it was such a horrendous decision to have to make. But I needed some guidance.
Were you at this stage being told you're likely going to have to, this awful statement or sentence, reduce the pregnancy? Was that at this stage they were already starting to say this? Yeah.
And I was thinking about that terminology, and parts of me wished that maybe they should have used terminate for medical reasons. Maybe that would have made me feel like I wasn't making that decision. It was because the medics were advising me to do that. Because I didn't even know this terminology existed. At the time, I didn't know that terminology existed. And once we delivered and I'd seen this terminology being used, I wasn't even sure if, had I terminated for medical reasons, or am I just using that terminology to soften the decision that I've made to make myself feel better about it?
What was the terminology they used?
So they used reduce. You've decided to reduce your pregnancy.
You've decided.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just,
It cuts real deep, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not saying neither is a nice term.
But I think what's implicit in it is that because this is a multiples, you've made a decision to end one of those babies' pregnancies. How do you make that choice?
Yeah.
Which one do you choose? I mean, this is, again, one of those things as a parent, you have your children, you love all of them. Somebody is telling you one of them has to die.
Mm.
So which one is it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just horrendous.
Exactly. And I was, so it was after that consultation that I was in a really dark place. I can't even describe how much of a dark place I was in. And it was because I had all these scenarios going through my head, you know, would they make me choose which baby I was going to, you know, have,
reduce. Yeah.
Sorry, I hate that word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And how do you make that decision? I just, I was in a spiral of thoughts. And when I look back at that time, I was really depressed, really depressed. I felt so alone.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. The listeners can't see your face, but even you just sort of reliving that, I can see that it's kind of taken you back to that place, you know.
It's like no one else can reach you, because it's like, it's almost like it's your body and you're carrying those babies. Like, you're the one that has to do this, even though you know the support. But again, it's just so isolating.
Yeah. It's such a lonely place.
And you don't know. You don't know who you can talk to. You don't know if there's support groups out there. Now I know, obviously, there are other people that have been through this similar horrendous thing. But at that point, you think you're completely by yourself in the world, and the rest of the world is carrying on, and you're stuck in this dark place with this massive decision looming over your head. And I think that's how I felt. How I felt like I had this dark grey cloud, you know, on my shoulders, over my head.
You're wondering how everyone else is going about their day when, like, this is actually happening to you.
Yeah,
this is what the world has to offer you. You're like, well, doesn't make any sense.
You're spot on. Like, it felt like everyone else is just sort of carrying on with their life, and I was stuck in our flat in darkness. I was signed off sick from work, and it was just, it was horrible. Really horrible.
Did
you have any advice or support around how to make this decision? Because again, from reading your blog, you know, I remember seeing that at the time they were sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were almost advising you, you need to reduce by two, you know, again, this terrible phrase, but actually, really, we would advise you only try to keep one. That's not what you did, but did they give you any help on how to make this decision? And with Ricky as well, like, how did you?
No, so it was really just left to us.
God.
It's just, I know,
incredible.
And I understand it was an unusual situation, but in my mind, then you refer on to a specialist, you know, to a tertiary centre. So, which thankfully, someone that I was working with told me to do. And so I pushed for a second opinion then, where we got referred to King's in London, and we were seen there. But, you know, even doing that, I'm a people pleaser, you know, I don't want someone to be offended if I've asked for a second opinion. So even that, you know, I worried about, oh gosh, what are they going to think? They're not going to like me because I've asked for this second opinion. But now I think, you know, who cares? Like, why does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, the only people that mattered in this were me, Ricky, and the babies. I'm so thankful that I pushed for that referral.
And so did that then change as far as you getting, I mean, I know that you got a bit more information about what was happening with these babies.
Mm.
And was that where, by being able to have that bit of extra information, you were able to come to some kind of decision, this horrible decision, but, you know, be able to go, right, this is what we're going to do.
Yes. Yeah. So we were seen. We spent the whole day there being scanned by multiple people. But because they were so specialist, this was not unusual for them to see this kind of pregnancy. And so they had more data. Obviously, it's still nothing set in stone, but like, they had more data. And the specialist did this particular procedure that I had done. He's one of few people in the world that does it. So we therefore had that door open for us.
Mm-hmm. And this is the actual procedure to end a pregnancy of one of these babies. Is that what you mean?
Well, that procedure in itself, so there's different types. There's different ways that they reduce pregnancies. There's a specific injection that they do, but that wouldn't have been an option for the identical twins because they share a blood supply. So had they injected something, it would have gone to both babies.
Okay.
They didn't want to do that to our baby that was by themselves in the sac, because that is the, in their eyes, was the safest part of the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So it didn't make sense for them to do that. So what King's Hospital offered was a laser treatment where they laser, and do excuse me if I get part of the details wrong, but I think they laser part of the umbilicus of the identical twins, and then that reduces one of the identical twins.
And basically what happens, it's like a miscarriage, isn't it? Is that what sort of happened? You sort of described that your waters broke.
Yeah.
And I assumed that that was a kind of like you're having almost like a partial miscarriage, or does the babies get sort of reabsorbed, or how does that?
So yeah, it's not exactly. So I think the baby would be reabsorbed.
Okay.
And eventually those cells sort of die down. But the reason that my waters broke was because I'd had a needle obviously pierce the amniotic sac. So they had expected some fluid to pass, but I think I'd had more fluid than was expected. That then led to all the other issues.
Yes. So, you know, you made this decision on which, and you went for one of the twins. And again, from your blog, you describe how there was some issues going on with the twins, basically. And they were looking, I don't know if poorly is the right word, but there was some things going on. So that's why that decision was made. And you had this procedure, waters broke, or you had some amniotic leaking, and then you went in for another scan to check and see how things were going.
Yes. We knew the risk with this procedure was that within 2 weeks of having the procedure, there was a 50% chance of the other identical twin dying. So we knew that risk was there. So when we went for that scan, you know, our hearts were in our mouths, because all we wanted to hear were that there were two heartbeats, which there were. We weren't, however, expecting that that remaining identical twin wouldn't have enough fluid around them. And thus, the consultant at that point told us that if this baby was when this baby was born, that it was likely that they wouldn't be able to breathe and that they would die after they were born.
Gosh, it's just so difficult, isn't it? Just to take in.
I just couldn't believe it. Like, I just, half of me was just like, yet another thing. You're like, just give me a break, you know?
Yeah. And let's just be clear, this is 2 weeks after you have just ended the pregnancy of one of your other babies. This is what we're talking about, and now you're being hit with another loss.
Yeah, like an expectant loss, though. It's not even, you know, it's just, there was just so many what ifs. So then you sort of leave that appointment thinking, okay, well, that possibility's there. That's really rubbish. In my head, I was using a different word for rubbish, but
you can swear on this podcast. It's totally allowed.
But then part of you thinks, you know, why can't that fluid reaccumulate? It was a needle that pierced that sac. That sac can heal, and then the fluid could reaccumulate. So that's
so hope is still alive.
Exactly, it's a hope. And I was looking through the letters from that appointment the other day, actually, just last week. And part of me thinks, oh, maybe I just heard what I wanted to hear, just took hope in what I wanted. Maybe I should have really listened to what the doctor said then. But why shouldn't I have had hope? And doctors don't know everything, so.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And I mean, would that have really changed anything? Would you have, you know, not really.
No. And there were points during the pregnancy when obviously that then led to numerous scans. There were points where the fluid seemed to be coming back a bit.
So Priya, you had all this grief that you're carrying along with carrying these two babies that are at this point still alive. But one baby that you've said goodbye to and one that you're expecting to have to say goodbye to, or in one way preparing yourself for that. But again, you can never really prepare yourself for this, can you? And hoping that it will be a different outcome.
Yes.
How did you carry on with this pregnancy? How did the grief play out during this time?
You know what? I'm really not sure how I did it. I was off work for a while, but then I did go back to work and I was moved to a general practice post, and my colleagues were so supportive. So that helped, and actually keeping my mind busy did help. But it was also really difficult because obviously I had all of this stuff going on, and then I would put my mask on and face patients every day. And I then became so used to putting that mask on that I think started to feel really numb at times. And then it would become all very real again whenever I went for an appointment. And every appointment I went to, there was something else, something else. There was never an appointment where, oh, it's just all the same. No. There was always another issue. And I would just always, then that would break me that day. That would completely break me.
Ask about the anxiety, like that must have been horrendous.
Yeah, every appointment I'd be that person that's in floods of tears, you know, in the corridor, being ushered into that other room where they take people to have the chat with. And I remember at one point I said to the fetal medicine nurse in the corridor that I can't take anymore. I don't know how I'm going to cope, I don't know how I can carry on. And I asked to be referred to the perinatal mental health team because I knew I was really struggling. And I don't know why, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. I wasn't in the right frame of mind to follow that up either. But I really wish I'd been listened to then. And I, you know, at points as well, you know, when I was a bit more sort of logical and trying to prepare myself, there were points where I thought, okay, you know what, I need to be ready for the worst case scenario. I want to have everything planned. I want to know what's going to happen, to know what my options are, you know. Can I bring that baby home? Is she still allowed to come home with me? What are the funeral options? I had no idea. So I did, even then, I remember going into the twins clinic one day and saying to whoever was doing my blood pressure or whatever, like, I'd really like to be put in touch with the bereavement midwife, because I've worked in gynae before. I've worked in obstetrics. I know these people are there, but I don't know why it didn't happen, but I wish I'd been in a bit of a better place mentally so that I could have sort of pushed for these things. But I just wish I was listened to a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, this isn't your fault.
Oh, I know.
This isn't your fault that you are in extreme shock and survival mode.
Yeah, you always need someone else to do that stuff for you. It's quite similar to what I went through, and that lack of support, because I didn't know either. I didn't know what was accessible, what was on offer, like, just, and I didn't push for it because you're so like drained anyway.
Exactly.
You're just trying to survive, and so of course, you know, you don't have energy to be pushing. I mean, we hear this in the news about advocacy patients advocating for themselves. It's like, well, that's fine if you're in a strong place, for lack of a better word, not to say that you're in a weak place if you're not there. That's not what I mean. But it's, you know, if you don't have that energy, you can't advocate for yourself. You're just trying to survive.
No, you need someone that who's got your back.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other term for it, but someone needs to have your back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anything that helped, or were you really struggling right to the end? Was there anything that gave you any kind of relief?
Honestly, no. I was really lucky in that I've got a supportive family, a wonderful husband, and work were really supportive. But with regards to other people, no. And, you know, I'm a GP trainee. The one person that probably should have been there is my GP. They weren't either. And that I think that I find that really difficult, because I've always wanted to be a GP, because I've wanted to be a family doctor, that person that sees you through the best and the worst things of your life, and that knows you. And I find that really difficult because I didn't have that for me. Mm. Like, I wouldn't let one of my patients go through that.
No. Has this sort of affected your sort of patient care, do you think, for your own self?
Yes. I mean, I've not had too many incidents where patients have been in this same position, but certainly I think I've always been quite an empathetic person, but I think, yeah, it's definitely changed my practice. And I think from this really shitty thing to have happened, I'm definitely a better doctor for it, so I've got to thank my girls for that.
Yeah. So you get to, was it 35 weeks 34, or something like that? 34 weeks, yeah. And they're saying, we're going to, we need to induce you.
Mm.
You know, you're sort of getting ready for that. You were leaking amniotic fluid. Mm. You didn't quite realize that it was amniotic fluid at the time.
How ridiculous.
Priya thought she was having some accidents and not able to hold on to her bladder anymore because she had two babies pushing on, which is, you know, could also be a part of it. So, but found out that, yes, actually she was leaking some fluid. And so then it was, we need to bring you forward and everything. But was it the night before you were supposed to be induced? Something like that?
Yeah, it was two nights before.
Yeah, you went into labor, rushed into hospital. These babies are coming.
Yeah. I don't think the enormity of what was happening really hit me then, or the fact that, okay, decisions are going to need to be made. At that point, it was just, you know, you're in that moment, you're in pain. And actually, you know what? I look back on that day and I had a lovely day. I woke up, got zoomed to the hospital. And actually then I had a really lovely day. I had an epidural in. I played Word Brain on my phone. I had Ricky there. I had my mum there. And it was actually quite a calm day, you know, as I progressed through labour. Then, of course, it all changed when it got to pushing time. And I didn't know if I was pushing right. You're dealing with all of that. You know, am I doing it right? Yeah. No one tells you how to push a baby out, babies out. So there was that side of it. And then there was, you know, what came next. And that was just, I can't, yeah.
Yeah. There's also some birth trauma in here, isn't there, as part of your story?
Mm.
And we're not going to make you go into detail about that. People can read your blog and we'll put your link to your blog there. But that's a part of this story too.
Yeah.
These babies were born. Who was born first?
Abia was born first. I had to think there for a second. Go.
like a true mum. Who are you again? And, you know, you had the NICU staff come in and they had to assess her. Mm. She was placed on you and then, you know, you made contact, but then she was taken
whisked
off
away.
To be assessed. So you're going, I hope she's okay, but we're not, you know, again, you know, this is a pregnancy with multiples and it's before term, full term. So, you know, there's potential complications. And then baby number two is ready to come out.
Yeah. So Aria throughout the pregnancy had been sitting in weird and wonderful positions. So she had an oblique lie for most of the pregnancy. And then at the end, I think she was sort of in between oblique and breech. So once Adia was born, they then tried to turn Aria so that she was head down, so that she was in a better place to be delivered. They tried doing that. And firstly, you know, props to anyone that has had ECV, which is the turning of the baby. I've told people as a doctor before that it's uncomfortable. It is so painful, but you know, that's a different story. They then put the monitoring back on me and her heart rate had dropped. So it was a case of getting her out there, and then they hadn't managed to get her head down. And I think that was one of the most horrific experiences of my life, because someone just hand in and pulled her out. And then she was brought out, she was put on me, and she was just like any other baby. And then she was again whisked off. And I remember her neonatal team was looking at her, and I remember seeing Ricky being called over, tense discussion with the consultant, and then I remember Ricky saying, you need to check with Priya, you need to check with Priya. And the consultant came over, and that was the point that he said that Aria's complications, so she had part of her bowel on the outside of her and part of her bladder on the outside of her, and her spine was curved because of the lack of fluid during the pregnancy, and that she wasn't making much effort to breathe. And he was asking, well, he told me his opinion that they could try and resuscitate and, you know, intubate, so putting the tube down her throat, and but that it was unlikely that she would survive that. So Ricky and I had already talked through all the sort of scenarios before I'd gone into labor, and we knew that, because one of the scenario that we were, the best sort of case scenario, was that she would be able to be intubated and then taken to Great Ormond Street, but clearly that wasn't the case. And we knew in that case that we didn't want her having tubes put down her and lines put in her and her going into NICU and potentially us not being there with her and something happening to her. And so we knew that if that was the case, that we just wanted to spend as much time as we could with her and for her to just be comfortable and know that mommy and daddy loved her. And so that's what I remember telling the consultant, to get my baby off the resuscitator. I do know that when I'm being logical, I know that that was the right decision. But there is still a part of me that still wonders, what if we had tried a bit harder, and, you know,
no. There will always be those what ifs, I think, in every scenario. And they're the things that haunt you the most. because you don't know the answers to them.
No.
Yeah, these paths not taken. And, you know, it comes up, I think, almost in every episode with people we speak to and what ifs. And we say it again and again, and I'll say it again, that we make these decisions, the best decisions.
Yeah.
We know we can in the moment.
Yeah.
And they're the right decisions.
No, and I know that when I'm sort of thinking clearly, I know that I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, you make the best decision with the information that you have at the time. And it's just, you know, when I see, we all do it, we all torture ourselves, you know, scrolling through Instagram or watching certain TV programs, and you might see a disabled child doing so well, or you might see on Instagram someone else that has had triplets. And I think that's when it leads me down into a bad sort of spiral of thoughts.
Yeah, totally understand that. We've all been definitely been there.
We have.
Yeah. And, you know, we love our babies. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like we love them and that love never ends.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't quite know what to do with it because they're not here.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we also punish ourselves by almost saying that
we're not good enough.
Yeah. And maybe because that person, you know, did that, they loved their baby more. Maybe
exactly,
because I made this decision, it means that I didn't love my baby as much. And that's not the case at all. It's just, it's a shitty situation that you're faced with at that time. And
yeah, I was going to say that. It's faced with the impossible of all impossibles.
Yeah.
And it's not fair.
Yeah.
It really isn't fair.
Big breath there. So Adria
Adhira.
Lived for
Aria. Aria lived.
Aria. Yeah.
That's okay.
There are three babies here.
There are three babies.
She lived for, was it just over an hour?
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
And she died in your arms.
Mm.
There was, in the middle of this, an issue with you, and there was some worrying events for you. So again, a lot of trauma, apart from losing your babies, you know, trauma about you, you know, as well, and your safety. And then you have one living baby, child now. I wonder if maybe you could tell us about each of their names and where those names came from.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just so beautiful.
Thank you. So, you know, obviously during the pregnancy, we were thinking about different combinations of names. And we really, at that point, we were just thinking about two names, because I think thinking about the third name, we almost felt, I think, we didn't have a right to choose a third name. So I think that's why we didn't think about it during the pregnancy. But we chose Adhya. So Adhya means goddess. And in fact, it's specific to a goddess called Durgama, which is like the mother goddess. And Arya's name means noble one. And I was looking up actually before our recording. In Hebrew, it means lioness. And I'm going to be very open and honest here. It's also based on, of course, Arya from Game of Thrones. Because I love that she's, you know, an independent, strong tomboy of a woman. And that's something that I relate to. So I really love that name. And the fact that it tied in with all these other meanings really meant something to me. And I think it just fit, because for us, Arya had a really noble job, a noble role. She was really integral in making sure that this goddess came to us and came to look after us and grace us with her presence. And so that's why Nadia is Adya, and Aria is Aria. And then Adira's name, I can't even remember when we decided on it, but it was well after they were born. And I liked the fact that it was just merging their names together, because that's what she is to us. She's a little bit of both of them. And Adira actually means, I think in Sanskrit, I think it means lightning. And again, that feels right. I don't know why exactly, but it feels right. So Adya is our goddess, and Arya had a noble job, a noble role to make sure that this goddess was brought into this world safely.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. So something you sort of spoke about a little bit in your blog was, you know, this cultural experience. And, you know, you were very clear that you're not practicing any religion that you grew up with, but yet this is still there. It's still part of you. And there were some concerns and worries that you had about that.
Yeah. So I'm Jain. I was brought up as a Jain. So the religion is Jainism. People think it's like Hinduism, which it is in some ways, but it's sort of in between Buddhism and Hinduism. So we don't believe in a god as such, but it's all centered around doing no harm to others and to any souls. So although I'm not religious, I like to have a faith, you know, or hope. So I still, you know, consider myself a Jain. I'm just not a practicing Jain. And I think that's what I found really hard, because you're told to do no harm. And so that's why I'm vegetarian. You're told you don't hurt other people, you don't kill other people, you don't kill souls. And so that's why I felt very hesitant in being open about the reduction, this termination that we'd had, because I didn't know how people would react to it. I was pretty sure that my generation would be fine about it and would understand, but I really didn't know what my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation would think, because I know that wouldn't have been the done thing. Or maybe I don't know. No one talks about it, so I don't know.
How do you know what they would have done given that situation?
Exactly. And this is, you know, it's a very hush-hush thing. Oh, you don't talk about that. I don't know anyone in my culture that has had a termination, or the medical or non-medical reasons, you know. And it must be happening, because
it's not unique. It doesn't just happen to one person.
Exactly.
Your reproduction is hard. So it does, it happens to everyone. But people, like you say, just don't talk about it.
Yeah. And so, you know, when we were sort of thinking about what do we tell people when we're pregnant and what's happened to this pregnancy, that's why we started off saying that, oh, we lost one baby. So there were three, we've lost one baby. And, you know, now we've been left with two and one's very unwell. Because I just didn't want people to think badly of us. And I wasn't sure that they would understand. But you know what, since the girls were born and I was then ready to start talking about things, then I've been quite open about it. And you know what, if those people that don't understand, you know, despite having read what we've been through, I don't think then those people will ever understand. And, you know, two hoots to them, quite frankly. And my reason for being so open about things is because, exactly how we've said, there are other people that may have gone through this or will go through this, and I want them to know that it's okay. It's okay to make this decision. There are other people that have gone through it. I'm here if people want to talk about it.
They're not alone.
They're not alone.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this podcast is so important as well, not just for people of my culture, for it is a really isolating time.
I mean, we're joined in that, whatever culture you're from.
Exactly.
We're joined in that isolation of what TFMR
yes
can be.
I just want to thank you just for sharing your story today. It's just been so moving, and I can't even put it into words, actually, just how strong you do come across. And I know you might probably think I'm not really strong, but to be able to sit there and just tell that story is just thing. It does take such courage and bravery. So I just want to thank you.
Thank you. Honestly, I love talking about my girls. I don't get asked about them enough. And for me, it's an absolute joy to come on here and talk about them. And you know what, it was a really difficult time, but I would go through it all again to have them.
Thank you. So one thing we do is we ask a piece of advice or a piece of hope that you would give to women or families either facing a TFMR or have undergone a TFMR.
Oh gosh, put me on the spot there. I think what I would say is, as with any baby that dies, they'll never ever be forgotten. And there are so many ways that your remaining baby child can remember them. And I think that's what I'm learning now. So sorry, it's not specific to do with the pregnancy itself, but there is hope. And it is really wonderful for me now, despite this horrible thing that's happened, to see how Adya relates to her sisters. So she recognizes them, and the way she's so affectionate to them, even though to her they're photos and or a grave. So I would say there's always ways that you can remember those babies that aren't there, and just take some hope in that the joy that will bring as well. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm so sorry if it doesn't.
It does. No, it does. And it's really beautiful as well.
We've spoken about that before, haven't we? About, like, with Jake and Benjamin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Thank you so much, Priya, for coming on and sharing so openly with us. I know that people will really be helped by your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll keep saying it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found it helpful today. Let us know by messaging us over on social media, Facebook, Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR, and Twitter at Talk TFMR.
You can also subscribe to our podcast from Podbean or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to make sure you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're published.
That's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.